A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Squiggly Career Podcast with myself, Helen Tupper, and the co-founder of Amazing If, Sarah Ellis.
Hi, everyone.
And tonight we're going to do a Q&A. We've done one of these before, but it's essentially where we've got different questions that have come up from our audience, whether they've been on email or on Instagram or on Twitter, and we kind of collect them so that we can do a good Q&A for you. I guess the good thing is you're going to get loads of different tips. It's not on one theme. The bad thing is it's really random. So tonight in our answering Q&A, we've got everything from how you're going to get over a bad day, how you can change careers, a bit around effective meetings, and also our favourite books and podcasts, which is what we're going to end on because I think it's quite a nice way to end the day. So before we dive into that, Sarah, it is Monday. We're recording on the evening. What exciting things have you got set up for your week ahead?
Actually, I'm going on holiday, so that's what I'm most excited about. So I've got a friend who I've not seen for about 5 or 6 years visiting from Australia at the moment. So I've got Wednesday afternoon off to spend some time with him, which I'm very excited about. And then we're going on holiday just for a few days in the UK. But, you know, I actually really recommend sort of regular breaks. I think if you work in kind of quite a few peaks and troughs, which I do, having, you know, breaks where you can just have a couple of days off just to almost like quickly refresh and recuperate. So not always big, long holidays, I actually find really useful. I mean, in some ways, the downside is obviously you don't hand anything over. So you essentially pick things up before and afterwards. But I still just like those little kind of extra long weekends away. So I'm definitely kind of gearing up to that.
You've always been a fan of the mini break, even
pre-children.
Yeah, I have.
Kind of my boyfriend is so keen that it's Monday. We don't go until Thursday morning. And he's already packed. Whereas I'm sitting here surrounded with quite a lot of mess and paperwork. So we have slightly different attitudes to packing.
It sounds pretty normal, the mess of paperwork, yeah, last minute. My week has, I've kind of got normal working week, but a highlight of my week, I'm off to Lytham St Anne's, Royal Lytham St Anne's for a...
Of course you are.
Yeah, Women in Leadership Conference this week, so I am getting the train.
It's all about golf.
I know, I need to pick up my golf. I actually played crazy golf, slightly drunken on Saturday night, but I think this is about like proper golf, so I probably won't mention that. So it's
a really nice golf course.
It's a leadership conference with about, I think it's like 88 women. Got some inspiring speakers, and it's just to kind of connect women. And also, I think golf is not typically a very kind of female orientated sport. So it's just to kind of make that more accessible to women as well. So yeah, so kind of interesting day on Wednesday.
Ooh, I look forward to the Instagram posts.
Yeah, can you imagine? If anyone give me any tips, well, I guess when you listen to this, I will already have made a fool of myself with any golf references. I'll let you know. So shall we get straight into this week's Q&A?
Let's.
I think you are up first with how to get over. Someone's got in touch with us about getting over like a bad day and a bad week. And I feel like you've got some very recent sort of morning experience that you can probably talk about how you don't let that set you back.
Yeah. Which is basically Helen's very polite way of saying there have been some ups and quite a few downs over the last few months with lots of different things going on. Actually, I did an Instagram post about it this Monday morning, which as if you're looking for it, is a picture with me kind of holding a cup of coffee. And essentially, the thing that I find most useful when things go wrong, whether they're things outside of your control or whether just things that you just weren't expecting, it is essentially all about mindset. And it does sound cheesy, and I always get really worried about kind of things sounding too cheesy. But essentially, you can choose how you respond to those situations. And I think it is so easy when your day started badly. So genuinely this morning, my little boy woke up at 3:30 a.m., didn't really go back to sleep. I got to the train, it was really badly delayed, wasn't going anywhere for ages, didn't appear. Then it started to rain and I hadn't got an umbrella. And, you know, I was so tempted to just be like, no thanks. I am literally just going to go home and go to bed. But I suppose I'm mindful of two things. Firstly, that they were all things I can't control. So what's the point, like, worrying too much about them? And secondly, if you take that into your day, so if you're grumpy for the rest of the day, or, you know, that kind of wipes out your attitude for the rest of the day, that then impacts on lots of other people who don't know how your day's necessarily started. So you might have just one interaction with somebody, and if you're, you know, a bit down or a bit grumpy and they don't know why, you know, we've all had this where you think it's to do with you. And I really don't like the idea of somebody feeling like, oh, well, Sarah's obviously not very happy with something, or maybe she's a bit upset with me about something, when actually it's just because I've had a really rubbish train journey in the morning. Because you don't always, you know, you can't always share those things with people. So that's one thing, is I think if you, you know, if you want to have a positive impact on people, you almost have a kind of a responsibility to not take it into your day. Plus, I think then you have a way better day.
It reminds me of that quote. Remember that quote about be aware of the shadow you cast?
Oh, yeah.
Which is often used in kind of relationship to management or leadership, in the idea that actually you cast quite a big shadow, and therefore the way you are has quite a big influence on other people. But actually, I think we all have a shadow, and you, to Sarah's point, you kind of choose what the impact of that is, and you are choosing to cast a bit of a miserable, bit of a grumpy shadow that then it affects other people. I'm always really aware of, I don't always succeed, but with my team, I'm always really aware of carrying over a bad meeting into the next meeting, because that's certainly not going to help the next meeting be any better. And it's not the person's fault that you're now having a meeting with, that the last meeting didn't kind of go the way you wanted it to. So almost trying to create the moments in the day where you just cut off the, you almost go, okay, that wasn't great, or that was actually really, really, really rubbish, but I'm going to stop it there. Finding a way to do that so it doesn't affect the rest of your day is so important.
And one thing that one of my previous bosses I thought did really well is when something has gone significantly wrong, so not just the kind of it's raining, your train was a bit late, but something that's really impacted on you, and that could be a work thing or a personal thing, depending on your own style, she often talked about the importance of signalling, which was essentially, you know, I've just talked about, you know, having a positive mindset, but sometimes things aren't great and they're not going particularly well, and actually making sure that you share that with people, because actually people want to help people, just support, being supportive, and also just understanding that you might not be on your best form because a certain thing has happened or is going on for you outside of your work life at the moment that, you know, you feel prepared to share. And that's really personal. Some people feel more comfortable doing that than others, but I just really remember her one day, I think she'd had her sons that were having like quite a few problems at school or something quite significant, and actually she just told her direct reports. She just sent a note just saying, just so you know, this is happening and it's actually really tough. And then you just, I don't know, I'm not sure we were any different, and I'm not sure I would have necessarily noticed because she was always so good and positive, but it just felt nice to know that and to be aware, and you probably give someone a little bit more space. So if you're in the right culture and that feels like the right thing for you to do, you know, signalling can sometimes also be helpful.
I think signalling also can kind of bring out some vulnerability for the people that do it, but in a really positive way. There's some research that we've referenced previously, which shows that teams are more effective. I think it's 50% more effective, but that seems like a really easy round number, like 50%.
Yeah,
but
suspicious.
I think it's significantly, let's say it's significantly more effective teams that have a culture where they can be vulnerable. The individuals in the team can be vulnerable with each other. So I think that might help you to get over your day because you might get some more support. But also that helps other people to, it sort of creates a culture where support, being vulnerable and getting support is a positive thing. So again, you're helping other people. And I think if you can get out of this being just about you and your bad day and how you feel, and think more about, well, how's this impacting other people? How does me being vulnerable and telling people create a culture where other people can do that? I think it sort of stops this being just this thing that's going on in your head, which can sometimes be a bit magnified as well.
And also, you know, being honest, obviously I still complained at the start of today to Helen. you still got about 5 WhatsApps from me going, oh my God, I've had the worst start to the day ever. This is a disaster. So, you know, you're still allowed to complain. Just, you know, pick who you complain to and get it out of your system as quickly as you can.
And maybe there's maybe 2 more points in there, which is have someone who you find quite supportive in those situations that you can just have a kind of quick moan to, and it's over and it's kind of out of the way. And then I think the other one is about getting some perspective. I think that's what someone else can sometimes do for you. Is they, I said to Sarah, actually, Sarah, you've had quite a few things that have happened in the past couple of weeks. and actually, I think you're dealing with them remarkably well. And I think, again, that can give you some perspective when someone else can play that back to you, because in the moment, it just seems quite magnified.
Definitely. Right, shall I move on to the next question, which is for you?
Yes.
Thank you. And I don't know if somebody also knows you and this is why they're asking. So it starts with, I'm working a lot. how can I start making some time for myself? So I guess in this is a bit of an implied kind of work-life balance question, but I think we all get into this mentality at times where it just feels like work is dominating your life and you're just not doing anything for you. So, you know, you work pretty hard, Helen, pretty consistently, but I do always feel...
I wrote this question. I didn't, but I do have a perspective on it.
But I feel like you're always very conscious about making time for yourself. So like, how do you even go about doing that?
So I think I'm quite tuned into how I feel and when I need to cut off. And I can be, I think, like positively selfish when I feel like, oh, this is kind of enough. Like, so tonight, for example, after the podcast, I'm actually a little bit tired today. I feel a little bit run down. So as soon as I finish this podcast, I'm just shutting off. I will put my phone away. And there are a couple of activities that I personally find really good for shutting off. So reading a really good book, but specifically a hardback book rather than a digital book when on my like Kindle or something where I can start browsing the internet and getting distracted. I find that's quite absorbing for my mind, so I can't think about anything else, or having a bath, or actually for me just going to bed early. One of those things is how I shut off. So point one is I'm really in tune with how I feel, and once I feel like, oh, do you know what, I'm a bit tired or I'm not feeling great, I'm not like, I'm just gonna keep going anyway. I'm very much like, okay, that's enough now, I just need to end today and refuel. And so that's my first point. And the second thing is I think a bit of a realization that continually working with no break is a lose-lose. It is not going to help you. You are not going to recover. There's the work wellbeing podcast we did, I think about two episodes ago, where we talked about, it talks about being a corporate athlete was the article that we referenced from Harvard Business Review in that podcast. But the concept there is that stretch is really good to help you grow, but if you do it too much, it's quite damaging. So, you know, if an athlete is running and running and running and testing their muscles every day, they won't improve because you need to rest and recover in order to improve. And I think that's very much the same here. And so if you just keep working, you're like, I'm going to slog it out every day, I don't have any time to pause, then yeah, you're not going to be at your best, but you're not going to be at your best for your company. And if that's what's driving this, if it's your company or a side project or whatever this thing is that's creating this perception that you need to work all the time, it's just lose-lose, not good for you, not good for the output that you're trying to create. So you just need to kind of create some kind of break. And I think finding that thing for you that is a really positive use of your energy, it might be exercise. So I guess for Sarah, for you, it's probably something like netball, right, that you would do, or running?
Yeah. I think some sort of exercise, but the same principle as you were talking about in terms of, I think now with all the distractions, it is so easy to like look at your phone or to quickly check your emails and to kind of get even just like mentally dragged into, oh, just looking at one email that you perhaps don't even like, probably CC'd in, you maybe don't even need to read or, you know, whatever. I think something that is so absorbing that you kind of can't work, it just takes away the temptation. Now, some people might not need that because you just have that discipline, but I just find even just going for a walk, I really enjoy just going for a walk and listening to a podcast, but with my phone in my bag rather than like in my hand. And somehow, again, psychologically, that feels different.
And I think I'll be really honest as well, I found it harder since having children. So before children, I kind of had more time to relax. So at a weekend, I could choose to work on Amazing If, or I could choose to just, I don't know, go shopping or I know, or sit and read the paper with a cup of coffee. Whereas now I go from quite an intense week where I'm spinning quite a lot of plates. And my weekend, I very rarely work over the weekend. Occasionally Sarah and I'll do a podcast on a Sunday night, but very rarely, because that is my family time, which is amazing and fun, but it's not really relaxing. So I kind of feel like now I have these very finite periods of time that I can relax. But the positive thing about that is it's made me even more conscious of it, because I know like that's the only spot I get. And I'll say to my husband, look, I really need to just go and have a bath or go to bed early. And we have that understanding that that's that will kind of be better for us at the weekend if I've kind of got more energy. So I think just being very specific about the time that you need, making sure that with your partner or with your friends or whatever, you're clear about that so you can sort of protect that time for yourself. And then also realizing your limits, because that sounds quite negative, but just realizing that you need that, and therefore you might need to say no to some other things, to going out or to taking on that extra project or going to that event or whatever it is. You might need to say no to that in order to give yourself the time so that you can re-energize yourself.
Yeah, and I would say actually this is probably the question that people come to talk to me about the most in a kind of work capacity is often. It's not that they don't enjoy their job, it's just that they are working so much. And I do think you often get to the point where you can't see the wood from the trees because you're lost in it all. And I definitely do this because I actually really enjoy what I do. So I could just sort of keep going, and then suddenly you have this realization of that is what you're spending all of your time doing. The one thing actually we've not kind of talked about that I always really encourage people to do is, yes, there's something about making time for things that are important to you, but there's also taking accountability for the work that you are doing day to day and really thinking about, I think Helen referred to it as kind of where you're making the most impact. And what happens if you started to delegate some work, whether it's say no to some work, whether it's to challenge the deadlines on some work. Often I find that people just sort of assume that things are not movable. And then actually when you, I don't know, go and chat to that person and say, I've got these three projects on at the moment. Actually, I can't do this fourth thing, or I can't start that fourth thing for another month. But I'm really keen to do it. It's just I won't have the capacity until that moment. Often people kind of go, OK, well, I appreciate that. And in the worst case scenario, if they're going, well, I think that's actually really important, then, you know, making people kind of have that conversation openly to then say, OK, well, if I'm going to prioritise this, something else needs to get stopped for a while. I think people often just keep adding stuff. And often because they are good and motivated, that list just gets longer and longer. And I think at some point you have to stop and go, okay, so if this new thing does need to come on, then something else does have to go, or it has to stop for a bit. And just realising that, like Helen said, keeping working all of the time, they are never the best people. The people who I've watched, who I really admire and who succeed, always work hard. And we talked about that in the Grit podcast. You know, they're really dedicated, they work really hard, but they also are very clear about when to stop, when to say no, what to do in what order. And I think that's actually prioritizing, I think, is a really important skill set, especially in squiggly careers, because we're all managing multiple jobs, multiple projects, everything's getting more projecty. So like, keep practicing that. What's the most urgent, what's most important, where do I have the most impact, and is that where I'm actually spending my time?
And my last thing that I'll say on this is about the rhythm of your job or the seasonality of your job. So some jobs have a seasonality. So maybe if you work in retail, Christmas is a particularly busy period. Or I've noticed actually in Microsoft, it's not like a seasonal business. It's just like a rhythm. So a couple of months, it's really, really busy. And then a couple of weeks afterwards, it's a little bit quieter. Whatever that rhythm or seasonality looks like for your business, I think you have to accept in that peak time, it is what it is. Like, you're not cancelling Christmas if you work in retail. It's going to be a busy time, but you've got to make some space as that's kind of pausing. So maybe that'll be in the end of January or something. Just try and take advantage of the rhythm of the business. Don't just keep working flat out. Try and pause before the next kind of peak comes. I've definitely seen that in Microsoft. I'm very aware now of that kind of rhythm where I can take a little bit of a quieter week, maybe not have quite as many meetings in my diary, maybe work from home a little bit so I can just do a bit of thinking and planning before it all takes control of itself again, if that makes sense, and I'm sort of on a wave. So that's the end of that one. Hopefully that's helped for the person that was asking about, I'm working a lot, how do I start making time for myself? The next one, Sarah, is for you. So we've had this from two people, actually, worded slightly differently. So the first person was said basically they wanted to change careers. How do they do that? And I've had a question also on Instagram from somebody who was asking about changing industries, which I think we've talked about a little bit before. But your thoughts on changing careers, changing industries, where does somebody start if that's what they want to do?
So I think my first question to people who want to do something quite dramatically different from where they are today is why? Like, why do you want to make that change? Because I find that people probably do fall into two camps. Sometimes people are just really not enjoying their current role or their current company, but actually they do quite like the discipline they're in or the industry they're in. They're just not well suited to what it is they're doing at that moment. But there's, when you kind of dig into it, there's often quite a lot that they do enjoy. It's just they've lost perspective and sense of that because there's also quite a lot they don't. So I think really often depends on your mentality, but we all have this kind of fight or flight type thing. And sometimes when things are not going well, our reaction is to go, oh, this is a disaster. I'm just going to do something really different. Whereas there might be some things that are really positive that are worth reminding yourself about that you want to take with you. Or sometimes it's genuinely you kind of going, no, I do want to do something different. I'm really clear about why not. Either, you know, I don't feel like my strengths are really valued in maybe this sector or in this type of a role. I can spot an opportunity to do something that I'll be more passionate about, more interested in elsewhere. My first bit of advice to people who want to make that kind of a change is if you are trying to do something very different, try and break it down into small steps and actually try and phase that change, because often it is quite difficult to jump, I think, from being... I remember actually meeting one girl on a leadership program who had, I think, previously been an accountant and then ended up working in more like sports marketing with like athletes and things like that because she was really into sport. So she had made that really dramatic leap. And the way that she'd done it was because it was something, it was kind of a passion point for her. She dedicated a lot of time to building up her network in that area, really trying to understand what was going on in that industry at the moment, trying to keep up to date with trends so that she could talk really confidently about it. And actually never worrying about, you can't compensate for the fact that that's not what you're doing at the moment. And you can't almost overcome that. So someone somewhere will always have more experience potentially in that area than you will have. But what you can do is show that you've got, you know, that willingness to learn, to dive in, that you're really eager, you understand, you've done almost as much as you possibly can before actually making that leap, so that essentially you're making it less risky for you because you've spent loads more time exploring and investigating before making that jump, and a lot less risky for the people taking you on because, again, they know that you've understood a lot, you can ask really good questions, you've hopefully built a bit of a network, so you're just giving yourself the opportunity to kind of make that change by having done almost quite a lot of pre-work yourself. So it does take quite a lot of dedication and you're sort of often then doing two things in parallel, but I think that often makes a transition easier. And sometimes it can be about you know, doing something in the interim that gets you a step closer but not quite to the thing. I don't know if that kind of makes sense, but often I see people who've done this really successfully will make one jump which gets them halfway to where they're hoping to go, and they're sort of prepared to dedicate 18 months, 2 years to being that bit closer because they recognise that it's a really good stepping stone for ultimately where they'd like to go.
I also think that don't try and be like everybody else. So let's say you're going for a role and it's a completely different job to the one you're doing. So a long time ago, I was going from sales into marketing. That was completely different. Now, me trying to pretend I'm as much as a marketing expert as somebody who is applying from marketing into marketing, I'm not really going to win that. What I can do is really almost look at my differences, the fact that I've come from sales, and then think about what advantages that represents. So in that situation, I could talk about my commerciality, my ability to negotiate, my ability to understand the end customer, and to think about how I could relate that feedback into marketing campaigns. So rather than hiding your differences because you think, oh, that's going to expose what I don't know, don't do that, because there will be loads of value. You might have to think about how you spin it or connect the dots, but that's your uniqueness. That's kind of the distinct value that you can add in that equation. So just think about how you'll tell that story to somebody else, because that'll make you stand out, that'll make you different.
And I do think, I've spoken to quite a few people actually who are looking to make a career change, and I think it can feel quite frustrating because in some areas, people find it hard when, you know, people applying for roles don't look like maybe the people before them, or, you know, they kind of have a point of view about, oh, you need to have this experience to be able to do the role well. Now, it's tricky, isn't it? Because we talk about squiggly careers, and you would hope that the premise of squiggly careers is that actually people appreciate, you know, more probably the kind of plethora of experiences that people can bring, and that ideally as a leader, you're looking at it in the round in terms of as a team, do I have all the right skill sets and the right dynamics, the right behaviours, the right strengths for what I'm trying to create as a whole? But sometimes people do still find it hard to look past, you know, what they've maybe had before or maybe what even they've done. And so, I mean, I'm not sure, this is not something necessarily that you can do differently, But I think you probably have to expect, have a certain level of resilience and perseverance. And again, the people I've seen who've done this well, it's often through connections, building relationships, going to speak to people individually at kind of a one-to-one level, rather than maybe just applying for things cold on LinkedIn or whether it's through recruitment agents or people like that, and trying to find a couple of organisations that can help you with that process. So there's things like Escape the City, which, you know, Escape the City do some really good events. Theirs is more about how to take the skills that you've got and kind of be in a very different environment. So the one I always remember is like, go and be a lawyer and save the turtles at the same time. Like that was like always my like favourite one of like, oh, I'm just going to go and do some, I don't know what lawyering does, legislation or something. And at the same, but it was like, it was definitely like you got to live in, oh my God, I don't know where turtles live, but it was like some exotic island like the Bahamas, which probably don't have turtles, but that would just show up my lack of geography knowledge. My dad would be so disappointed in me right now. But you get to go and live somewhere on the beach and use the skills you've already got. So that's, it does what it says on the tin in terms of, you know, escaping the city. But I suspect if you took one of those sorts of roles, you would also be getting a whole new skill set, you know, probably getting to go and live in a really kind of different and really interesting place culturally. So that's one that can be really helpful. And they do, I've been to some of their events and they've spoken at some things that we've done before. And I always think they do a really brilliant job. And then I think there's one called Career Shifters, which we'll put on the resources. Yeah, which I've seen before. And they do some, because all of their content is very targeted at people who are trying to kind of make this move, I think they really understand that context of this is hard. You do have to kind of persevere and have really good hints and tips and, you know, how to do it, the steps to take, who might be the best people to speak to, who will have that open perspective versus, you know, there are some industries. And I, you know, I've been for jobs before where I genuinely have been in a very connected industry to that industry and been told, oh, no, we don't come from that exact thing. And, you know, I've actually been quite close to that thing and still been told, well, no, they would only take people from a specific industry. And that can feel quite disheartening because you sort of feel like people are not considering all of the different things you have to offer. But equally, I go, well, if you're trying to do something different, go to where people are most open to that rather than trying to kind of change the whole system, essentially.
And I think if it's not about changing careers, if it's about changing industries, it's pretty much the same advice. I think just succinctly my experience, because I've moved from, oh gosh, FMCG to financial services, to energy, to oil and gas, to consumer products and services, to technology. That's kind of like my career switching or shifting. And I would say, yeah, your network's really important, really focusing on that. What's the value that you add, not the knowledge that you don't have. And then also the only other one for me has been to have a really strong and consistent personal brand. So that thing that you're all about, kind of make that visible and consistent in different places. So for me, you know, I'll write for a marketing week, and what I speak at events will be on a similar theme about career development and leadership and helping people there be their best. And that's kind of translates across all the different industries that I might do. And I think that would be my third thing as well. Just think about how you're showing up outside of those opportunities consistently.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So our fourth question before we get on to our favourite books and podcasts, which I suspect we're going to have to keep quite short because otherwise we'll get lost in a world of, oh, you should read this and this is really good, is should meetings be limited to 15 minutes?
I love this question.
I knew you'd love this question.
So I do, I love a bit of productivity. So like every productivity app or collaboration tool that I could have downloaded, I will have downloaded. And I love the question, but I'm actually not sure how I feel about 15 minute meetings, because I feel like if that was a rule, I actually might find that a bit stressful. So I heard from someone recently about a manager who will only let them talk about three things in a meeting, and which is the manager's rule for efficiency. But I actually would find that quite stressful, because what if I had more than three things? And in the same context, if every meeting had to be 15 minutes, personally, I'm not sure that would work for me all the time. And I'd just be like, I've got to get all this done. I'm just going to have to schedule another 15 minute meeting. However, there is some
basically just have loads of back-to-back 15 minutes.
Yeah. 15 meeting number two. There is quite a lot of research, and we'll post some of these articles around the ineffectiveness, at the opposite end of the scale of kind of micro meetings, if that's what we call these 15 minute meetings. There are like the mammoth meetings. And that's the all day, like the 1 day, 2 day meetings. And I've definitely been in companies where they've done those. For example, in when I used to work for BP, almost like 1 month in every four, we'd go to a different country for a 1 week long meeting.
Wow. that is crazy. A lot of meeting.
And you'd be doing kind of the data, and it is proven that your brain has a kind of a limited attention span before you will start thinking about other things. You'll start having almost like social cues or distractions, checking your phone, shifting in your chair, looking at a clock. And what I found interesting from, there's a Forbes article, Sarah, that you found. It says 10 reasons why your brain hates long business meetings, which I love that. And they talked about this this concept called psychosocial contagion, which I think sounds really interesting. I love it. When I looked into it a little bit more, other people call it emotional contagion. But the idea of this is all of that kind of irritating, like if you're a bit bored in a meeting and you're shifting and you're flicking through your book or you're looking at your phone, that behaviour is almost catching. Think of that yawn mentality. You know, when you yawn and someone else yawns, I think this is the same thing. It's almost like this mirroring behaviour that actually then sets off the rest of the people in the room. So it's not just as soon as one person gets bored and starts sort of physically demonstrating that, other people kind of catch that boredom, and then that's just unproductive. Also, I looked in one of the articles, which is the Fast Company article about science-backed methods for more productive meetings. It talked about the TED Talks, and that TED Talks are 18 minutes long. And there's some scientific research that says the attention span is 10 to 18 minutes before people start checking out. Now, obviously, you can bring people back, but it's like after 18 minutes, you kind of need to re-engage people with maybe a question or change the person who's speaking to kind of keep people listening. It's one of the reasons actually why Sarah and I try and make sure that one of us doesn't talk too much on this podcast, because we're aware that you might like kind of tune out from us when we're talking for too long. So we just make sure that you get to hear from each other, though someone did once say that we sounded similar, so I'm not sure it always works. So should they have 15 minute meetings? I actually think it is an interesting discipline to have a look at. The don't just automatically do 1 hour meetings. I've started to try and do 45 minute meetings because it cuts it a little bit shorter, and then I at least get 15 minutes to just collect my thoughts, you know, sort out any quick actions that I can do before I get onto the next one. If I'm honest, for me personally, a whole day of 15 minutes meetings, I'd probably just find quite stressful, because it'd just be too, I feel like it would be too many. It wouldn't reduce the amount of meetings I would do. What do you think?
I think also it depends on the kind of type of meeting. So I suppose a lot of the time, I think when meetings are talked about, it's this very like formal context of probably sitting down with an agenda, going through a kind of number of points together. And that's where some of the discipline about going, only be in the room if you really need to be, make sure you've done the preparation before. If there's things like pre-reads, make sure you've read them. Sainsbury's actually had some really good disciplines around things like that, where almost like the opposite of the bad contagion, the good contagion happened. So things like if, you know, every, it was, and I think because it was kind of instilled from the top, it was like, right, you know, if people send a one page summary beforehand, everyone in that meeting room beforehand has read it and absorbed it and are ready with their questions and what they think, so that very quickly you can move to having a discussion, which obviously engages everyone, and getting to a recommendation or an approval or whatever it is you need to get to. So what I find interesting about kind of meetings is the things that happen before and after a meeting are just as important. And this is where I sometimes feel like I often fall down. I'm good at preparing because I'm naturally a preparer and planning person. If I know I've got something coming up in whatever sort of meeting context, I'm good at making sure they've got what they need to read before. I've thought beforehand. Where I'm rubbish is afterwards. I think because I kind of go, oh, and I'm done. And then because I don't naturally have that kind of completer, finisher type mentality. There's been a few instances, particularly recently, where I've had a really important meeting with someone and then could have really done with an hour afterwards to consolidate what I was thinking, probably write up some of the things, make sure I knew what the actions were, almost like kind of finish that process, which is not about having another meeting. It's just about me sitting for myself and making sure I've really understood and know what needs to happen next. And I'm actually, that was one of the things I was thinking about today. Actually, I'm going to try and do that a little bit more with how I manage my own time, is because I think you often know when you need those times because they are things that are more complicated, or you may be being briefed on something, and make sure that then I also allocate myself the time afterwards to go, just give myself 3/4 of an hour probably with, right, what do I do next? And actually really just focus on actions related to what I've just heard and not let myself get distracted by, oh, what emails did I get in the last hour, or all of that kind of stuff. So that's going to be my own top tip to myself.
So it sounded like maybe 15-minute meetings wouldn't work for us, but for the 45-minute meeting definitely does work for me, as long as I don't put lots of back-to-back 45-minute meetings in. And it sounds like for you it's just thinking about the pre, during, post meeting is the way that you make them more effective.
Yeah, definitely. Should we do our favourites?
Yeah, our favourites. Do you want to go first?
Okay, so I thought I would do a podcast I'm listening to already that I really like, and one that I've just discovered, and the same for a book. I realise I've not told you this before, so feel free to change the format if you'd like to. So a podcast I really like is by a guy called Andy Bird. His podcast is called The Inspired Leader, and he's written a book with the same title. And he goes around and interviews just really interesting leaders from lots of different backgrounds. So the reason I like it is, not everyone, but most people are kind of outside of the day-to-day business environment. So they could be people from the forces or school teachers, but they all have leadership capabilities and have achieved really amazing things. And he just has a really lovely interview style, and I think gets really interesting insights from people. And it's just a good listen that often I take away. I'm interested in their stories anyway, because they, you know, they've been very successful in their field. So it's fascinating to know why they do what they do, and you know, what they enjoy, what they find difficult. And there's always some, you know, just those pearls of wisdom that you're like, oh yeah, that's just really helpful to remember or to learn. So I love that one at the moment. And then the one that I've just discovered is called Women at Work. So this is a HBR, so Harvard Business Review podcast. And I hadn't realised that at the start of the year they'd introduced a new one that is specific to almost like gender challenges, opportunities in the workplace. So there's some things like podcasts on gender pay gap, on why imposter syndrome impacts women more than men. And I've just discovered that one. I saw it recommended on something on Instagram this morning. So I've got it ready to listen to tomorrow. So they're my podcast ones. Do you want to do yours first?
Yeah, sure. So I'm going to follow your format on the fly. So an established podcast that I listen to and never miss is the Eat, Sleep, Work, Repeat podcast from Bruce Daisley that I think we both listen to. The reason I like it is because I just really like Bruce's questioning style. So he always obviously heavily researches the people that he's speaking to. So he asks really interesting questions. He really goes a bit deeper into the people's research. He connects concepts from different podcasts. So he'll be like, oh, I spoke to this person and this is similar. And I just find his brain and the way that he interviews and the people that he gets onto his podcast to talk just really interesting. He always covers things that I'm like, so he'll cover purpose and culture and teamwork and time management and just things that are on my mind whenever I see his new podcast. I'm like, oh, brilliant. Yeah, that's always, it's always kind of like a go-to thing that is interesting for me. So that's an established one.
I've got a couple of new ones, actually, because I just love listening to podcasts. So there's an Easy Numbers podcast that I am listening to, which is done by somebody who has a website called Easy As VAT, which is not easy. I'll just put that one out there. But the Easy Numbers podcast, it kind of, there's a backstory to that, which we'll leave there. But it's just a podcast that kind of helps make accounting a little bit easier, a little bit, if you're kind of ever a bit scared of finances, that Easy Numbers podcast is quite a good one. I'm also really enjoying the In Good Company podcast. That is one for kind of female entrepreneurs and by Otago Awegbe. And it's just really good. Again, has had like Emma Gannon on, really interesting person who's got a cactus business in London called Janelle. I've forgotten her surname now, but she, yeah, really, really good stories. Just really diverse people. And Otega has this really calming voice that I just want to listen to. I listen to it when I'm driving to work, and I always just feel a little bit calmer when I've listened to that podcast.
Oh, that's a nice thing for people to hear. I bet you no one ever feels calmer when they listen to us. I just can't imagine that would be the feedback that we would get.
Let us know if we're calming. That'd be a really nice, piece of feedback, the emotion that you take from our podcast. Yeah, it'd be always interesting. Always open to feedback.
Yeah.
So let's do books.
Yeah.
You start with your books.
So, Jill, I really hesitated. I wasn't sure about recommending this book because it's not... the title of the book is not one that I love, but I do think the content is brilliant regardless of gender. And that's Career Advice for Ambitious Women. And there's something in that title that always just makes me pause a little bit because it's just probably not a sentence that I would say. But Heather McGregor, who wrote the book, is a journalist, has lots of writing for the FT. And I just remember reading it and it's very practical and it's really stayed with me. All of her advice has really kind of stuck in terms of things to learn, and she gives you, it could feel patronising, but I actually just found it useful if you kind of take it in that spirit. At the end of every chapter, she literally gives you homework. And actually, if you listen to her talk and things, you can really imagine her giving you homework. And you'd always do it because she's got such like lovely authority and she's very credible. And you just think, okay, yeah, I'll go and do my homework. So I liked the fact, I think when I first started thinking about my own personal development and career development more seriously, I found that quite a useful kind of how-to guide and also really inspirational because, you know, she's interviewed lots of women who are very successful and she is very successful in her own right. And you talked about Emma Gannon just then. So Emma's got a new book out called The Multi-Hyphen Method with a lovely bright yellow cover. And I've not read it yet, but it's very much, I think, the epitome of squiggly careers. So she used to be a social media editor, I think, at Glamour magazine, left a couple of years ago. I think she's in her late 20s now. And she really does the kind of portfolio career thing. So writes books, did podcasts, loads of different things. So I'm really fascinated to kind of read her book and her insights. I suspect she'll be a brilliant writer because she's been a journalist. And actually, she was featured, I saw, this morning in the Management Today 35 Women Under 35.
I saw that too, yeah. At the weekend. Congratulations to her for that. It's brilliant.
So yeah, she's someone who I just think is a really good role model for kind of this different way of working that I think lots of people are interested in exploring.
So mine then, I think you'll be surprised by my classic. It's because I don't think you and I have really talked about it, but I was thinking about the book and it actually made me think, oh, I really need to reread that. There's a book called Made to Stick by Chip and Dan Heath, who are brothers. And it's
He's
all
got
about...
to be American with Chip.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, Chip and Dan.
I absolutely love that name, Chip.
It's for a second child. The book is all about how you kind of make ideas, how you influence people with almost like, there's another book actually called By What If called Sticky Wisdom that I like. But so I've obviously got this theme of how you make ideas stick and influence. But I like this one. The whole book is structured around an acronym that they use and they give lots of examples of where this has been brought to life effectively by other companies. But they talk about kind of stickier ideas are simple. So the acronym is success, by the way. So the S is simple, where you've got the core of any idea. It's unexpected, so how do you grab people's attention by surprising them? It's concrete, so you've got to make sure that an idea can be grasped and remembered. It's credible, so you've got some kind of statistics that make it believable. It's emotional, so it has that kind of appeal to it that people can connect to it. And then it's got stories, so people can kind of feel empowered by it. And it just talks through brands who are doing it really well, and it's a relatively easy read. I remember thinking, oh, I'm going to do this differently, I'm going to do this better. And actually, from recommending it on the podcast now, I'm going to reread it it. And I've just finished another book, so now I've finished this one, I can kind of get back to Made to Stick, which is called How to Be an Overnight Success, which I appreciate is like an irritating title, but it's a really interesting book. And it's, again,
oh, quite... Brilliant. Are we now going to be an overnight success?
Well, that's amazing. Actually the concept of the book is that nobody is an overnight success. So it's written by Maria Hatz or something. I can't say her surname, but she's the founder of a brand called Rhodial, and it's a beauty and a skincare brand. But it talks about how she built the business and how everyone was saying, oh, it's an overnight success. And she'd actually been working on it for like 18 years. And it's all about how she, the commitment and her ideas. But it's even outside of kind of like a beauty and skincare context, it's got a lot of great ideas about how you get PR, how you can get people to endorse your brand, how you build a personal brand. So each, because they're like a little chapter, each one's, I think it's like about 12, 13 chapters, and each one is kind of her story of how she built her brand. And then at the end of each chapter, there's some really practical tips. And I read it couple of evenings in a couple of hours, just went through it quite quickly on the Kindle app on my phone, but again found some quite practical ideas to take away for Amazing If as well.
Brilliant. So hopefully you found that really useful today in terms of those Q&A's, you know, going from everything from, you know, finding more time to do things we want to do to what books you need to read, which is probably some irony in that, in terms of you've got no time and then we're just telling you to listen to some podcasts, read some books. But hopefully it's useful. And we will keep doing these Q&A sessions probably every couple of months, depending on demand. But if you do have questions that just pop up, don't feel like you have to wait for us to ask for when we're doing the next Q&A. Just let us know on Instagram or LinkedIn or messages, and we just store them all up anyway. So if you've listened today and you think, oh, actually, there's a question now I've got that they've not covered, just let us know now, and we'll add it to our list, probably in one of Helen's many productivity apps that she has. We'll save it somewhere. And as always, we always really appreciate people recommending the podcast to friends, family, people you work with. Please do rate and review the podcast if you get a chance. That really helps us to make sure that we can keep doing these weekly. And as ever, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter, get in touch with us on LinkedIn. We're not too hard to find.
Yeah.
And so next week, we're going to talk about something that sounds a bit sad, actually, when you say it, but loneliness at work. And this was prompted by an article in The Telegraph this last week talking about actually how, you know, very relevant to squiggly careers, we're all going to be working in more places, probably more remote working, people working from home more regularly. Does that actually make you feel kind of more lonely in terms of you don't have the same sense of collaboration or relationships with people at work that maybe you did previously? Or actually, is it just that as a society, we are becoming lonelier at work? And there's actually lots of talk now around kind of loneliness generally being quite a big societal issue. So I've also read and done some really interesting work previously on the power of actually having a best friend at work. So I thought we would kind of combine a couple of themes almost about these kind of the importance of relationships at work and how does that work and how is that changing? And a couple of people actually got in touch with us last week as well when they saw that article to say they'd be really interested in us talking about that. So we're going to explore that a little bit next week.
I'm really looking forward to talking about that because I feel like it's a kind of, along with the mental health podcast that we did, it's just an important theme that I think people might find really, well, I hope they'll find all of our podcasts useful, but I think some people are more comfortable talking about how do I be more efficient with my time and what books can I read? And I feel like this could be something, you know what, if someone's feeling a bit lonely, this could be helpful, really helpful for people that might not have had that conversation. So I'm looking forward to having that conversation next week.
And as ever, thank you so much for listening. Have a really good week and we'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.
Bye.